Dear listener, and welcome to a brand new episode of Injury Time Extra, a podcast series where we get up close and personal with the guys who make the game the beautiful game in India. Well, last episode, you heard us talk to Eric Parthalu, where he shared his in-game, his pre-game, his post-game character with us. Well, if you thought that was all Parthalu had for us, well, you're mistaken. Today, in the second part of that episode, where Sandeep speaks to Eric from Bangalore, he shares a lot more. His time in South Korea, his time in the north of Korea. So without any more spoilers, just go ahead and enjoy the show.
And you went to South Korea after playing in Melbourne. Not a great experience for you.
No.
Could you elaborate on what went? Because I don't think a lot of people know about that.
No, I'll give you a short story if I can. But I got a really good offer to go to Jeonbuk, which was the top club in Asia that year. They won the Champions League. And it started well. The first 3 months were great. But for the five after that, they basically tried to move me on and were training me by myself, double sessions, running me, telling me certain times to turn up for training and then changing the times and just trying to completely control my mind and to try and move me on. And because it was a very good contract, I was not willing to move on. And that's the ugly side of business football, particularly in Asia. And you never know why I was even moved to that club. I was doing very well for Melbourne City and I was very comfortable. And
you're close to Australia breakthrough, the national team.
Yeah, I'd already played at that point. But I mean, if I would have kept playing regularly, maybe I would have got a chance. And because I went to South Korea and I played six games in the first 3 months, which wasn't too bad. But then after that, I didn't play for 5 months. And all this stuff happened, and I don't want to go into too much detail, but it was pretty ugly for about 5 months there. But we got through it, and the opportunity presented itself to go to Qatar. I couldn't go back home because of a tax issue, and so I decided to go to the Middle East and play. And more or less the same thing happened there. Played 10 games in 2 months or 3 months, and they didn't pay the salary for 3 months. And then they offered me some money to leave to get a striker in just before Christmas time. And after that year, what Amy and I had gone through, my wife were just like, let's take the money and go and enjoy the holidays. And then, it came to January, February, and I had things that were lined up. I had two offers to go and play in Australia, but I couldn't play due to this tax issue. And there was things in China, Malaysia, Iran, America, and all these things. Every single week it fell through, like, why are you not playing? A lot of people asking questions, and then it just kept going like that. So from January till May or June, it was basically every week something else was coming up, and it always fell through in the end. So it was quite an exhausting experience. So by the time we signed with Bengaluru, it was a sigh of relief. And that's why I think I've come here with such a strong attitude to do well, because I know how precious it can be. I was at the best club in Asia, and within 6 to 12 months, completely out of the picture. So the important thing now is to try and play games and to enjoy my football.
How do you get out of a rut like that? Because mentally it must have been very tiring. Because you were on top of the world.
Yeah. So you have to have good people around you, and I did. I had my wife, some very supportive family, and you just got to have mental strength, and you got to find it every day. I mean, I won't go into details, but I was at training at 9 o'clock in the morning, and you'd get there and at 8 o'clock, and they still wouldn't train you till 11 o'clock. You'd run in 35-degree heat, then you'd go home, you'd come back for a 3 o'clock session, and then they'd say at 4 o'clock, oh, you can go home, and you're halfway home, they'd call you back, you go back to train, you'd run around in the heat again, and you do that for 5 months. So it was not easy, but it was a really good contract, and I was not willing to walk away from that money. And we were still sending letters from FIFA every week to say returning to the squad, and basically because they kept paying my salary, they had no leg to stand on. They couldn't do anything. So it was frustrating, but I'm just glad I went through that, because it made me a stronger person.
And you keep talking about your wife and his support. Can you elaborate a little? How long have you been married?
Yeah, 4 years. So she's, we're a team, because, whatever she sees in life is what I see, and we sort of bounce off each other really well, and she'll tell me straight. There's no BS with her. It's, you know, if she sees something, she tells me, and oh, that's not right, or this is right, and vice versa. I think we lean on each other quite a lot. And, you know, during that time in my career, she was literally rolling me out of bed to try and motivate me and keep me going, and, you know, making me breakfast so that I, you know, little things. So she's a great find, and that's why we're enjoying this journey so much, because, you know, we're in a successful team and we're enjoying ourselves, and in a new culture that's, you know, everyone's happy, you know, happy to be around. So right now we're just enjoying that.
Moving a little away, how does it feel to be one of the few people who have been to both Koreas? You've been, how was that? How different is it?
No, it's very similar from, you know, I suppose from, I went to the DMZ, which is basically on the border of South Korea. You can do a tour and you can basically get to the border, and they have a 2 kilometer, that's the lunch coming up. Okay. 2 kilometer little strip where there's a neutral zone which you can't enter, but you can stand on this area here and you can look into North Korea. And we did that once before, and some of the stories that the South Koreans were telling us were just, you know, you couldn't believe. They're trying to build, you know, dig tunnels underneath, and we saw these tunnels, and the flagpole was like this high, and then the South Koreans built a bigger one, and they built a bigger one, and then they're both blaring music at each other, and just really bizarre. So you have already a perception of what North Korea is, and from the media as well. Going to North Korea, it was, I guess it was more or less of what you expected. I mean, everything was quite controlled, a little bit staged. The countries are more or less the same, mountains, you know, good food. People seemed happy, but very controlled. Like, everyone was structured, moving in a line, waiting out in front of the bus. You know, there was 20,000 people in the square doing some dance routine to practice for a concert for Kim Jong-un. And so the experience was unbelievable. I was just telling one of my mates about it yesterday, and I still can't believe what we've been through this year. It's just been amazing, because you know, the rocket shot off over the hotel, and
there was a rocket.
Yeah, so there was. They sent a nuclear rocket over to Japan while we were there, and they said that if you would have gone out at 6 o'clock in the morning, you would have seen the trajectory, like the missile actually going over the hotel. So, I mean, you couldn't write that script. And when I heard we were going to North Korea, I was like, everyone was obviously a bit worried, but after getting back, it was just, you know, who do you know has ever gone to North Korea or will get the chance to go to North Korea? So, yeah, football takes you some pretty crazy places.
And you went to Maldives also, in a very politically...
Yeah, I mean, Maldives was nothing like that. I mean, they made it out to be quite...
Worse than it is?
It was nothing. Nothing was there. It was not... There was a couple of people shouting, protesting, but it wasn't... There's no, you know, from what we saw, it wasn't that bad. So, I mean, yeah. Hopefully the next country we go to has got nothing going on.
You know, there's this place called Wagah Border in India, mm-hmm. where it's like the border between India and Pakistan. It's beyond Amritsar, that's it.
Yeah, yeah.
So, we'd gone there. It's like similar to what you said. So, there's a gallery. They have this ceremony during the evenings and mornings, I think, mm-hmm. where there's flag folding and racing and all these kind of things. So, Indian side, you can see the Pakistani gallery right across.
Yeah.
And the Indian side is always filled with people. Like, there is thousands of people. In Pakistani, there are like some 15 guys sitting
there. Okay.
And then they'll be singing these songs and playing mm-hmm. these patriotic songs, and we'll all be singing. Like, yeah. It's the only time I felt like, huh, like, I am an Indian because I can see Pakistanis over there.
Yeah.
That kind of feeling, but it feels like, you know, I'll shout.
Higher. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And this MC will be like, yeah, shout higher, I don't know, like harder. It's a little...
Is there bad blood between Pakistan and India still? Like, I mean, if a Pakistani person came to India,
nothing,
it wouldn't be like that. Yeah. It's just a political...
Yeah, it's just political. I think people in general don't really have any problem with it.
They're just fighting for land.
That little bit of land there.
Now I think it's a little bit like, you know...
Yeah.
It is there, so it's one of those things you're supposed to feel, so...
Okay.
But mostly I think it's just... made up worse than
yeah, it sounds like it.
Yeah. And now, what do you do to unwind?
To unwind?
Yeah.
It's a hard question at this month, because we've been so many places and traveled, and the answer is sleep at the moment. Any chance I'm getting is to sleep and relax in my apartment and just switch off completely. Because, I mean, training's not been too hard. Thankfully, we've been smart with that. But when you're playing a lot of games, it takes it out of you. And you, I'd love to be able to say, oh, I go for nice walks on the beach or if I read a book or something. But literally, I'm watching Netflix every day and going to sleep, eating good food, doing some stretching. But in the off season, like, yeah, this year we want to try and do a bit more traveling. We want to try and do some trekking. You know, stuff for the soul, not just sitting on a beach with a cocktail. You know, I want to go and enjoy, you know, certainly the region around India, maybe go to Nepal, places like this. And we're starting to plan the off season now. If we can sort our future out, what we're going to do, we're going to plan a good off season of traveling. So
is that the Aussie thing to do? Because you're very outdoorsy.
Very outdoorsy. And I think my wife, being Scottish, they love the outdoors as well. So that's the one thing like we wish we had more of, is to walk around, you know, parks and things. And where we live, there's one park we can go to, which we're thankful for. But yeah, it's a bit different here for us. But yeah, like Aussies always travel. They travel a lot around the world. But the last... So in my career, not to bore you, sorry, but...
No, it's very interesting.
Three times in my career, I've gone 18 months without a break. So I went 18 months without a break, again 18 months without a break, and then again 18 months without a break. So I've not really had that much chance to travel. So if I can, like I said, sort my future out, I know what I'm doing next season, it'll be a really good off season where I can plan something for the first time in, you know, 5-6 years, which is good.
Music, interesting.
Yeah, I'm into anything, but nothing that you know, makes you want to get in a crowd of people and hang around there.
You're not into the disco music and all of that?
Yeah, I love going on nights out with my friends and enjoying going to nightclubs, and of course, but you just can't do it during the season because it's just no opportunity to recover. And after games is probably the only chance you can have a chance to unwind, but... You know, our games finish at 10:30, and you can only have 2 hours here in Bangalore. And, you know, you can't even walk after games. So we'll save the nightclubs and celebrating for after the season.
And are you making any plans to go to Russia in the summer?
For the World Cup?
Yeah.
We thought about it. And I know a few boys that obviously play the national team. And we've made loose plans to maybe go across, but it'll all depend on what we're doing. Football-wise, but I'd love to. It'd be a great experience.
From Australia, what is your expectations? When they came through the playoffs?
They've got France, Denmark, and... Jesus, who's the other 13? I should know this. Is it a South American? They're not... I think with our new coach, I mean, they're going to try and get out of the group, but realistically, it's going to be very difficult. But never say never. In the World Cup, you never know what can happen. You get a shock result the first game and you're in with a chance. So the Australians now have really grown in confidence from playing throughout Asia. We changed confederations from Oceania to Asia a long time ago, and or 10 years ago. And it's worked well for us because we've had harder qualifications but have had more quality games to play in. So I think going to Russia, where, you know, apart from maybe like the France game, we can expect to get something out of the other two. So you just never know. But I think Australia, like now it's, you know, we've qualified for the last 3 or 4 in a row, and it's kind of expected now. So this year's qualification process, we have to play a playoff against Syria and someone else, I think. And everyone was expecting us to, you know, to go through automatically, and they were disappointed when we didn't. So that goes to show you where everyone thinks Australia football should be. But the reality is everyone in Asia is getting so good now, and it's not just your powerhouses like Japan and the Irans of the world or Saudi or Australia. So you've got to be careful for the qualification process, but if we make the World Cup, it's usually, you know, a good thing for the A-League as well in Australia.
And you spoke about the most dominant game, I think, is rugby.
It depends how you look at it. AFL, which is Aussie rules. That's the biggest sport, which is where you basically kick the ball and catch it and put it through the big goalposts. There's 4 goalposts you've got to get it through. It's massive in Melbourne, but overall, it's probably the most followed and the biggest spectator sport. They have, you know, crowds of 80, 100,000 people to go watch these games. And then I would say it's probably rugby league and football. Football is very close to rugby league at the moment. I think if they can get it right in the next 10 years, it'd be very close, touch and go between that and rugby for second spot. It'll never be number one.
What is it about the Australian culture? Like you have good Olympics team, mm-hmm. Swimming and sprinting and all of those kind. And then you have a good football team, make the World Cup. So rugby again makes the World Cup. You have a great cricket team who was one of the most dominant ones for maybe mm-hmm. close to a decade, and especially when I was growing up.
Yeah.
That Steve Waugh and all of them.
Yeah.
Like, is it cultural thing that all of you are into sport? Everybody plays sports? Is it something?
Yeah, unfortunately, it's changing a lot now. Like the world, we're blessed to have so many options in Australia. Everyone, you know, they're not as hungry as, say, like that's why football we'll never be good at, because we're not, when I say never be good at, but as good as a Uruguay or an Argentina, you know, ranked higher than them, because those guys are fighting for their life to play the sport, whereas it's just a choice for a lot of these kids. Their mum and dad put them into football because, oh, they're a good player, but they're not fighting someone on the street to take their ball back home for the night to play with it, you know. So, you know, I think historically we've had good athletes and good sporting teams because we've had that mindset of being quite distant from everyone. Australia's the arse end of nowhere. It's away from everywhere, and it's a very much, how do I explain it? Kind of like an us versus them mentality. We feel like the underdogs all the time. And then when we started to get a little bit of status, like you said, in cricket, it was about a 10-year, you know, dominance period. And then it's kind of faded away because I think there's just so many options in Australia now, and there's a good living to be made in sport. So people kind of come and go quickly, and it's not like it was 10, 15 years ago. For a population of 24, 25 million, yeah, we were overachievers. But it's slowly starting to go down, I think, which is a shame.
You're in the Southern Hemisphere, one of the few countries like in the Southern Hemisphere.
Yeah.
How does it have like Christmas in the summer?
Mm-hmm.
Like you played in Scotland, so you know the other end of it. So how different is that?
Look, my wife is Scottish, so she will tell you that it's absolutely incorrect to have Christmas in summer. But for me, it's normal. I can remember walking out of my house, you know, barefoot to run down the road to see what my mate got from Santa Claus, my best mate. And, you know, the road burning as you're walking up, you know. So I have all these great memories of being, you know, hot. And as I got older, it was all about having a barbecue and a few beers with your family and enjoying cricket in the backyard. And it was always cricket, and it always will be for Aussies in the summer. Every family will play a game of cricket in the backyard at Christmas. But in Scotland, yeah, it's either sideways raining, or it's cold, or it's snowing, and everyone goes inside and gets cozy in the house and has a nice hot dinner, whereas we have cold seafood, and that's sacrilege to people from the UK. So we have a bit of a laugh about it. But yeah, my wife prefers to be in the UK for Christmas, that's for sure.
How is it? You come from Australia, hot and all these things. You go to Scotland,
mm-hmm.
it's raining all the time.
Yeah, it was an adjustment at the start. I actually got softer as I stayed there longer. When I was there at the start, it was almost like I was trying to prove to myself, wearing short sleeves and no gloves or anything for the games. And it was, you know, below zero. And as I got to my third and my fourth year, I was wearing gloves, long sleeves, you know, skins, everything. So I quite like the cold weather though, because I feel like you can exert yourself more and you can run around a lot more. And so I love the cold weather.
Last couple of questions. Who's your best mate here in BSC? Who do you hang out with?
Yeah, Akash.
Akash,
yeah.
The media guy, yeah?
Yeah, no, it's difficult to answer because everyone's been fantastic, and obviously I room with Jono, and obviously we have that very similar, you know, style of humor because we're, you know.
So you're also a prankster.
I'm not really.
I know Jono's
a big prankster, but he's been here for a lot more than I have, so he's a lot more comfortable with a lot of people. So now look, I get along with everyone, but if you have to say someone, probably you know someone like Dimas or Jono, because we have something in common with. You know, Dimas played in Australia, and but I get along with everyone. There's not one I'd say I'm best mates with. No.
Other than Akash.
Yeah, Akash.
Hey, can you say any pranks that you can say?
pranks.
I know about the egg prank. Well, that was before you. That was before you came.
This year we've been really slack on all this type of thing, but I think we've just been so focused on trying to be the champions of the ISL, and there's not a lot of pressure, but I think boys feel if we muck around too much, we're not taking it seriously. And we have a group message going, so there's a WhatsApp group all the time. So there's a lot of crap that goes on that message quite a lot. But before the games, you can see it quietens down completely. No one wants to do anything out of turn, you know. So there's not been a lot of pranks, mate, so maybe we've got to get a few for the...
Before the final?
Yeah, after the final.
After the final.
Yeah.
Anyway, I just want to wish you all the best.
Yeah.
It's been great.
Thank you. Good to talk to you.
Yeah, you too. Thank you so much.
Take care.
So that was Parthalu sharing his story with us on Injury Time Extra. We hope you liked it as much as we did bringing it to you. Stay tuned for more stories from players who play the game in India. So until next time, when we get you a brand new episode with a new player, have a great week and enjoy the game.